from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning, I'm John Sepulvedo. We begin with a lawsuit that was filed yesterday that hopes to marry health care and civil rights in order to get Medi-Cal doctors paid. Here's health reporter April Domboski.
16-year-old Gloria De Jesus waited months to see a neurologist for her epilepsy. Her brother often lands in the ER because he can't get his asthma prescription filled on time. Their mother, Rebecca Binsfeld, says that's why her family and other Latino patients are suing the state.
I just want better health care. I want to be able to call the doctor if I'm not feeling well and to be able to be seen. I want everybody else on Medi-Cal to be treated the same as those who have private insurance. It's just very, very stressful and very, very scary.
The lawsuit alleges doctors refuse to see Medi-Cal patients because the state payments are too low. Attorney Darren Ranahan says cuts to Medi-Cal funding coincided with increased enrollment of Latinos. They now make up 55% of the Medi-Cal population.
If you disinvest from a program as it's coming to serve more and more people of color, that's a form of race discrimination.
State health officials countered the claims, saying reimbursement rates had been thoroughly reviewed and approved by federal officials, and regular monitoring of the program had not identified any systemic problems with access to care. For the California Report, I'm April Domboski.
In Sacramento, some lawmakers are hoping that a cap-and-trade plan will be saved by setting aside money for affordable housing. Cap-and-trade is a system aimed to curb greenhouse gases. The current program expires in 2020, and Governor Jerry Brown has struggled to extend that program. Guy Marzorati joins us now from Sacramento. And Guy, I can't understand this. We're going to get a cap-and-trade bill with affordable housing provisions?
It could happen. Legislative leaders said that they delayed this vote, originally scheduled for tonight, to Monday, because of the late hour that it would actually become eligible for a vote tonight. But they also mentioned that they're going to use this as an opportunity to continue the discussion on housing affordability, which is something near and dear to the hearts of a lot of Democrats, some of whom were not totally behind this cap and trade bill. And so I think this is an opportunity to address that in using the money that cap and trade would generate through selling off these emission credits to companies. Currently, the bill that's in print doesn't have any language about how to spend that money. It could be that they use the money they get from the cap and trade system, which currently mostly goes to high speed rail, affordable housing, transit projects. They could use that to address some of these affordable housing concerns and in the process get some more Democratic votes.
And of course, we should say at this point, we are just speculating, trying to read the tea leaves of things that you have heard in the halls there in Sacramento. We're going to speak to the head of the Sierra Club in just a few moments. And I'm thinking they're going to tell us that they are not happy about a proposal over carbon monitoring. Tell us what this proposal in the cap and trade bill is and who benefits from it.
Well, this is a proposal that, yeah, has really drawn the ire of a lot of environmentalists and some environmental justice aligned lawmakers. It basically prohibits local air districts from limiting carbon dioxide emissions on top of what the state is already doing. It basically says the state will handle these kind of emissions that come from refineries, and it doesn't allow local air districts to act on top of that. And, you know, local air districts in some cases are already trying to do that in the Bay Area, trying to limit some of the emissions from refineries like Chevron. Businesses say that's basically you're double dipping. The state is already regulating greenhouse gases. It's not a local pollutant. And so local air regulators should stick to public health and not get involved with that.
And finally, do we expect any other sweeteners like this housing proposal? This proposed housing proposal, I should say, being put into this cap and trade bill?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. I think once you start getting into expenditures and appropriations, then it becomes a situation where lawmakers can ask for certain things in order to get their vote.
Guy Marzorati joining us in Sacramento from our politics and government desk. Thanks, Guy.
Thank you.
We're going to stay in Sacramento right now and get more reaction on this and other environmental legislation with Catherine Phillips. She's the head of the California Sierra Club. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
So we were just hearing from our Guy Marzorati about the differences, the changes to the cap and trade deal. What's your response to this? What do you think was gained and lost in this deal making?
You should know up front that Sierra Club has never been a big fan of cap and trade. We've always worried about what the effects might be on local communities. That being said, in this particular cap and trade bill, there were a number of things given away. The oil industry came in and demanded that air districts not be allowed to do anything that would control CO2 pollution. at facilities that are covered by cap and trade. To my knowledge, that's the first time the legislature has been seriously considering a bill that would essentially tell an air pollution agency you cannot control a specific pollutant.
Let's go to a bill that is very near and dear to your heart that cleared an assembly committee yesterday. This would essentially mandate that there would be clean energy by the 2040s. It's not very far away. Tell us how this would work.
The bill does a couple of things. One is that it accelerates the goal for renewable energy so that we get 60% of our whole energy, electricity, would be coming from renewable energy by 2030. That's a significant jump because right now we have a 50% requirement by 2030, and this would be 60%. It's entirely possible, it's doable, it's achievable. We know, for instance, that there was a day in May that 57% of California's energy was being produced by renewable energy. The next part of the bill says, okay, then once you've achieved that 60% by 2030, all of you utilities have to work with the Public Utilities Commission, the Energy Commission. You all have to work together with the utilities to figure out how do you get that last 40% to get to 100% clean energy in California by 2045.
And Catherine, what happens if this bill fails?
We go back to the drawing board and try it again or some version of it. You don't always get ambitious bills through in 1 year, so we'll come back.
Catherine Phillips joined us from Sacramento. Catherine, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Support for the California Report comes from Collective Health. Through technology, design, and human support, Collective Health offers companies and their people a new way to experience health benefits. CollectiveHealth.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected, on the web at theschmidt.org. And Barracuda Networks, security, data protection, and application delivery solutions for physical networks and public cloud services. Learn more at barracuda.com/products.
I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.